Welcome to the Awakened Goddess Show, your source for inspiration, wisdom, and personal discovery. The place to learn from a diverse mix of mentors, metaphysical experts, spiritual leaders, and best-selling authors from around the world. I'm Angela Wilkinson, mindset mentor and founder of the Awakened Goddess Academy. Join me as I explore the minds of my masterful guests while they share powerful insights and easy-to-use tools you can start using right away. Now, let's tap into the energy of the Awakened Goddess and be enlightened by today's guest. Hey, I'm your host, Angela Wilkinson, and welcome to this episode of the Awakened Goddess Show. Born in the UK and raised in New Zealand, Carlton Brown has led an interesting, eclectic, adventurous, and purpose-filled life, always taking the road less traveled. Carlton is a veterinarian, biotech entrepreneur, vaccine innovator, hobby archaeologist, and private researcher, as well as the author of Discovering Ritual Meditation. His lifetime fascination with pyramid archaeology and cultures, ancient priesthood ritual knowledge, lost civilizations, and humankind's history through the Holocene is augmented by his researches into the science of altered states of consciousness. Today, Carlton and I talk about how pyramid archaeology reveals sacred ritual processes for accessing our higher states of consciousness. But before I talk with Carlton, do you want to become more confident so you can attract more love, wealth, and success into your life? In the Awakened Goddess Academy, we explore love, wealth, and health from a spiritual point of view as we teach you the secrets of the divine and the ancient feminine arts. Are you ready to live your best life now? Join us today and let's make magic together. Go to theawakenedgoddess.com/join to get started now. See you there. Now let's talk to Carlton. Well, welcome, Carlton, to the Awakened Goddess Show. I am super excited to talk with you today because you have researched 450 pyramids and visited over 100 ancient sites and ruins, and that is super cool. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Angela. Thank you for that welcome and also for the invitation on the show, and I certainly hope we were able to have a good conversation today that your listeners enjoy.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure we will. There's going to be so much. I just can feel it already. There's going to be so much cool stuff that we talk about. So first off, I'm super curious to find out, what was the catalyst in your life that sparked your interest in doing this research?
Yeah. I think to answer that question, probably I've got to go right back to childhood. I mean, I've had a fascination with Giza and ancient pyramids since I was a little boy. And, you know, I think in order to help appease my father and develop a relationship with my father, he was also actively interested in that. So, you know, that was the natural originations of it. In 2008, I was in Egypt on a diving holiday, and I read a book called Path of the Poles by Charles Hapgood. Mm. And that was, you know, if you like, Graham Hancock's popularized that in Fingerprints of the Gods. And, you know, I read that book and I asked a question, you know, were these pyramids built before the supposed global catastrophe? Or afterwards. And then I asked the question, well, how would you go about detecting that? And the obvious thing was alignments. So I started looking at, you know, the global pyramid map, and I just opened up a can of worms from there, basically.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I can visualize that. It's like you start down this path, you think, oh, that's, you know, that's great. And then once that doorway's open, there's so much there. I mean,
You know, as well, is all through my life, you know, I missed 3 years out of school. I got out of school at 16, qualified as a veterinary surgeon at 21. And life's been pretty chaotic, pretty fast-paced, pretty hard work. But always underneath, there's been something inside me telling me, Carlton, you have an important job to do. Mm. And, you know, that's been a huge driving force, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you gave me like an insider peek to your book, Discovering Ritual Meditation. And oh my gosh, I only got to take like a superficial look, but the amazing information you have in there, the pictures and oh geez, all of the correlations that you make and how you bring it together with ritual meditation. Let's talk about that, because there is so much in this book. I mean, it's like about 400 pages.
Yeah, there is. What I started with was a series of observations. And, the observations pretty clearly were of the 450 pyramids, 80% of them were aligned with either the equinox sunrises and sunsets or the winter solstice sunrise, summer solstice sunset. So I thought, that's kind of odd. And yet that correlated perfectly with the most important ritual festivals of the sun god. The ancient sun god religion. So, that observation got me going. What does all of that mean? And, ultimately what I did was to find a shared archaeological fingerprint from amongst all of these religions. It was the same fingerprint. And effectively, they did three things, which was, they created this common or shared alignment of pyramids and sun god temples. They embedded their ritual processes symbolically in their deity art and icons. And what I did was to decode that. You always see the sun god or the goddess. Mm-hmm. You always see sacred time symbolism. So this is 47 degree angles, which are the 47, the significance of that is just the difference between the north-south axis of Earth between the winter solstice and summer solstice. And the serpent was the equinox. So mm-hmm. they always paired the 47 degree, for example, the pharaoh. Pharaoh wears these funny hats mm-hmm. angled at 47 degrees, and they have, serpents in the center of their forehead. And they did this sort of thing all around the world. And they were then always in conjunction with the hallucinogen symbols. So, I identified that fingerprint very early on. It didn't take long to sort of, piece that together. And it just perplexed me. What does the sun and sun god mean? And, I just ripped open a can of worms and it all happened from there. And, the long and the short is my curious mind, my inquiring mindset. So what happens when you get sacred time together with entheogens, you realize that these people built places of sensory silence for conducting sacred rituals, and you see evidence of meditation. That effectively tells you the meditation process. So ritual meditation is nothing more than meditating at sacred time in sensory silence under the influence of magic mushrooms and perhaps a little bit of LSD, aligning your body with Earth's magnetic axis and making sure you do that in sensory silence. When you bring all of those things together and you've fasted, you've prepared in a very sacred manner for days beforehand, 3 out of 4 times I have these mind-blowing experiences.
Wow. Well, my God, you've just blown my mind. Just in talking about it. I mean, usually I'm able to follow, but I have to say you went a little bit over my head. So let's kind of break this down.
Because
No, that's good. Not too many people challenge me. So that is a compliment.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So, okay. What is sacred time?
Okay, sacred time is a term I coined really to denote when the ancient sun god religions conducted their most sacred ritual festivals. So these were conducted by the priesthoods and leaders and elite. And these were the winter solstice sunrise. So we have across almost every religion, even in Christianity, you have the solstice. A few days later, someone's born. Like, in the case of Jesus, he was born on the 25th of December. Mm-hmm. And then we have, of course, the equinox, and the equinox festivals are associated with the phase of the moon. It's either the new moon at sunrise or it's the full moon at sunset or in the evening. And then, of course, you have the summer solstice sunset. So that's sacred time. And so the significance of sacred time, when you boil it all down, the sun interacts with Earth. And Earth, we sit on Earth, and Earth interacts with the human biology. And what the solstices and the equinoxes do is effectively supplement our a particular type of brainwave called alpha brainwave, and they're produced when we meditate or when we're in transcendental states of consciousness. And all sacred time does is passively increase the voltages of those alpha brainwaves. And the way the brain works is once you hit voltage thresholds, doors and gates and highways open up. So sacred rituals really were nothing more than supplementing a meditation process. And you supplemented it with sacred time, which was about alpha brainwave voltages. And you supplemented it with the two very important brain chemicals, either dopamine or a type of serotonin. Mm-hmm. So those are it's sacred time, and B, you are supplementing the meditation process.
So it's like you're totally amplifying your ability to access those higher levels of consciousness.
Exactly, because if you stop and you look at it, if it was easy to do, everyone on the planet would be living and working from their higher selves, but we're not. And we haven't, you know, somehow I think we've probably gone backwards over the last couple of millennia. So, this is about, if you can imagine the mystic, you know, the spiritual mystic who spent 10, 20, I know people who've spent 40 years being mystics and they've only transcended a handful of times. So it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. And all rituals do when they're done properly and done sacredly with the right preparation is increase the chances of you accessing altered states of consciousness or your higher self versus waiting 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think with technology, I mean, our ability to connect and all of the all these frequencies that are surrounding us through technology, our TVs, our radios, and all of this stuff that we've integrated into our lives, it helps us stay connected on one level, but very disconnected from our own selves.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's like most things. We move from one extreme to the other. You know, we wait until this comes along. We wait until there are social pathologies. And then there's a kind of a reaction, you know, from the new generation of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm wondering, can you explain the Schumann resonance?
Sure. Okay, Schumann resonances, they're they are the electromagnetic signature of the planet Earth. And they're generated by processes, particularly lightning, and particularly the sunrise and sunset. So if you were looking from space, you know, we see sunrise on the ground with the sun coming up on the horizon. But if you were looking in space, you would see a day-night boundary. And that day-night boundary is associated with lots of, you know, electromagnetic physics, which also generate Schumann resonances. So Schumann resonances are effectively a set of electromagnetic signature peaks under 60 hertz frequencies. And there's what we call a fundamental frequency of the Schumann resonances, which is a frequency of 7.8 hertz. Mm-hmm. And that 7.8 hertz is the, if you like, it has a wavelength equal to the circumference of planet Earth.
Oh.
And it is also this, 40,000 kilometers long. So that 7.8 hertz frequency is also the same frequency as our alpha 1 brainwaves. And those alpha 1 brainwaves are produced when we meditate and produced when we transcend. So that's the significance. And all our ancestors were doing was Schumann resonances peak on the winter solstice sunrise and the summer solstice sunset at the same time they conducted their rituals. Mm-hmm. So what they were doing was effectively harnessing a method of supplementing the alpha brainwave voltages. That's all Schumann resonances do.
That's amazing. I mean, how did they connect with that? How did they know that that was happening to be able to make that correlation?
It's a good question, and it did take me a little while to come up with some plausible ideas. But I think, first off, you can notice the difference. If you're meditating around sunrise or sunset or in a lightning storm, for example, you really feel that. You know, it has an incredible effect of grounding you and mm-hmm. making you incredibly present with mm-hmm. your higher self. So, that's one way of doing it. And the other, and I've benefited from this tremendously, is accessing knowledge and information and altered states of consciousness. Mm-hmm. I've been shown how to meditate, instructed, how to position my body for chakra and kundalini activations. So you get taught things.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Well, as you're talking, it made me realize, we have that natural tendency to want to watch the sun rise and the sun set. And you're right. It really focuses your presence and you become very grounded in that moment watching that change. Yeah.
Yes.
Super cool. Yeah. Now you talk about Kundalini. So I want to talk about that because can you explain exactly what that is?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a really good question, Angela, about Kundalini, and I'm not sure, whether you've read, much literature on it. All I can say is I haven't really read much literature. I've not really done the sort of research research I would liken to, you know, the body energy systems and meridians. But what I can say through personal experience is I've had my chakras activated over the last year or so, particularly, you know, Kundalini activation, crown chakras, and, heart chakras as well. So, you know, in terms of the Kundalini activation, I'm not sure the essence of what's going on, but there's an incredible energy release in the body. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that energy is within the body or it's coming externally. But when I was conducting one of these rituals at the spring equinox last year under the influence of magic mushrooms, it effectively took me when I was, you know, in a rather uncomfortable moment, and something said to me, sit down. Mm-hmm. So I sat down and I began my meditation again, and it taught me to get into a particular posture. And upon, you know, doing that particular posture, it said, relax. And, you know, as I relaxed, my bladder let go. And it was in the moment of letting go of my bladder that the Kundalini activated. And I was just filled with this most intense bliss, warm, glowing sensation in my body that had an incredibly healing effect. And not only that, it also set off other chakras opening as well. So my heart chakra and my throat chakra at that particular time opened as well. I sit in front of four volcanoes on Lake Atitlan in Guatemala.
Ooh.
And, you know, this is one of the chakras of the planet Earth, and the magnetic activity around here is huge.
Oh,
and
wow.
One of the things that happened to me since the summer solstice is my crown chakra is it's activated, and it's buzzing like an electric transformer 24/7 between my ears. Mm-hmm. And so if I disappear out of the Guatemalan highlands, the buzzing goes. But as soon as I come back to the Guatemalan highlands, the buzzing starts again.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, very cool. So you know, the long and the short is I've been on a healing journey for 6 months, and how I call it, I split up with my girlfriend just before the solstice, a few days before the winter solstice last year, and, you know, really came to the conclusion that I needed to heal, you know, some wounds from childhood. I came from a very abusive childhood, and that had an impact on me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a really mind-shattering, profound experience at the winter solstice involving, you know, my witnessing of the birth of the universe as pure consciousness and unity awareness, of, you know, effectively being a Buddha image, and, you know, experiencing heart chakras and things, you know, opening, and the, you know, the dissipation of, you know, negative energy. But, you know, come the summer solstice, I had self-realization experience. It was the Buddha experience. It's effectively where you emerge into your higher states of consciousness. And it is the awareness of, you know, being your higher self outside of space and time and transcending who am I.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I am, and I am my higher self. And that, and I was referring to the ego image, is not I. And the moment I answered that question, I merged with pure consciousness. Mm-hmm. And in the process, it then said, you know, put your head back. Tilt your head back. And in the process of tilting my head back and opening my mouth up, and it's breathing through my mouth, the crown chakra lit up.
Mm.
And it resembled a lotus flower, an opening lotus flower, above which I had this eye of awareness. And, you know, this just lit up and it hummed inside my head. And, you know, when I came out of this trip, you know, I've been there ever since. You know, I've been transcended where my window of consciousness, now I understand that the ego is it's a counterfeit consciousness.
Sure.
It's not real. It's impermanent. It dies when we die, but we continue as our higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I simply, you know, as soon as you come to that realization and you're back here in the earth realm, what I now find is I'm in the present. I'm ever aware of the now. I have no noise inside my mind. I just have this bliss, peaceful feeling, this tranquility inside. And my head buzzes from the first thing in the morning when I wake up to last thing at night when I go to bed.
Mm.
And it actually, I think what happens is the crown chakra is where our consciousness emanates. So the thing that I notice is instead of emotions and everything, you know, being routed through the ego parts of the brain, it's almost like all of those inputs directly input to the crown chakra. And the crown chakra is in the frontal, I think it's in the frontal part of the brain. And I think it's what we would call the prefrontal cortex.
Mm-hmm.
And the angulate cingulate cortex, those two things together constitute the third eye. And it is that region of the brain that drives meditation and drives transcendental activity. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me is the crown chakra. Mm. And that would possibly go against what traditional spiritualists would say.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. You've had some really powerful experiences. And wow.
Because, you know, the outcome of that experience is instant healing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the moment you have that self-realization that you are your eternal higher self, the ego becomes subordinated.
So then how do we access our higher states of consciousness using ritual meditation?
Sure. I think first off, we've got this ritual process, and we need to recognize that we're only really going to conduct this ritual meditation process four times a year.
Mm.
And I think we need to be very, very careful and also very respectful,
mm-hmm.
Of how we go about doing this. And so preparation is really important. And usually, you know, what I do at the beginning of every year is I look at my calendar and I say, when are all the full moons? When are all the new moons? When are the solstices? When are the equinoxes? Yeah. And, you know, of course, my preparation starts at least a month before each of these rituals because I need to order magic mushrooms. And they take about sort of 10 or 11 days to grow once you get them. So you need about a month lead time to get that.
Mm.
I'm fasting for 3 days beforehand, a lot of prayer, a lot of intentions, doing a ceremonial fire, invocation, and just getting myself into a really well-connected, you know, I'm meditating all day in the last 3 days. I'm in nature. I'm walking barefoot everywhere. And you just get yourself into the most loving spot. You're in love with yourself. You're in love with everyone, you're in love with nature and with God, and you really want to get yourself into that, you know, that spot. And then, you know, come, for example, if we're then select sunrise as the, you know, the ritual festival, you know, we're going to figure out when is sunrise, and it's normally about 6 o'clock, so it means you're going to start your meditation about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
So, you know, it's an early night before, you've fasted, you get up, you mix your magic mushrooms with some orange juice and lime juice or whatever, and, you know, you drink them down, and you know, then you need to be in your room or wherever it is that you're conducting this, and you really want to be silent. Silence is absolutely golden. I mean, not just visual, I mean, not just auditory silence or, you know, hearing, but also, you know, visuals as well. You just want the room to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you start your meditation, and usually you find after about half an hour as the mushrooms start to kick in. And what I find with just mushrooms alone is, you know, I'm taking, you know, 5 grams of dry psilocybin magic mushrooms or, you know, 50 grams of fresh or wet weight, but I'm also usually after about 30 minutes, I'm usually throwing in a sort of half an LSD or about 100 micrograms of LSD on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's enough to dissolve the body space time boundaries. And, you know, next thing you know is you emerge into your higher self in eternity or outside of space and time. So that's basically the process. You've got to be good at meditating. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, this sounds like definitely an advanced technique and that you would want to, you know, if you've never done it before, you definitely would want to be with someone that could help you through the process.
I think so. And I, you know, I kind of have a word of caution to people as well as, you know, the thing I find in my quizzing, even of people who coach meditation, is not many people realize that there are higher states of consciousness beyond calm abiding.
Mm.
So in other words, experiencing the higher self in the now, that journey can be taken much further. And it normally takes you a couple of decades to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But with rituals, you know, you can take that process much further. So you need to be careful about who is teaching you.
Okay.
And the dogma that they are bringing to the meditation.
Because you're really putting yourself into a vulnerable position.
Yes. And I think you bring up an incredibly important point for me. It's that, you know, the process that I am providing in the book, Discovering Ritual Meditation, is a process you can control. And I don't think humankind has ever had in the public domain a ritual process that it's controlled, because in the past, these have been controlled by shamans and mm-hmm. priests, and these have been kept from the common human being.
Right.
So I think what's really important is here is I wish to empower you to take control of your life and heal and spiritually awaken.
So I wonder, because this is like a more advanced technique, I'm wondering for more of like the average person, maybe someone that's been practicing meditation, what's something that they could do? Like, what would be the next kind of like the next couple layers or levels that they could take or deepen their meditation to kind of move in this direction of accessing these higher states of consciousness? You know, maybe they're not quite ready to use the magic mushrooms or use psychedelics, but what can they do to kind of deepen their practice?
Sure. You know, I really do, you know, I talk about this in quite a bit of detail in chapter 11 of the book. It's called The Mind Transformation Plan. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to answer that question, you've really got to ask yourself, what are you trying to do? You know, what are you trying to do with your life? What are you trying to do with spiritual practice? And again, you know, I don't really find too many people who can bring all of this together, because, you know, for me, the outcome is twofold. I think, you know, we're either trying to spiritually awaken, in other words, to advance our spiritual and consciousness practice, or we're trying to heal ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so depending upon why you're doing what you're doing will really determine, what you do and when you do it. But I think for me, you know, just jumping straight into ritual meditation is not a good thing. Right. And I think, you know, something I did for years was I tested magic mushrooms. I ate them. Mm-hmm. And I experienced a lot of nature and a lot of, how do we call it, going internal. But I never experienced altered states of consciousness. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it allows you to say hello, you become acquainted, but it allows you to process your surface psychological material. Mm-hmm. And you really want to do that before you try and have one of these, we'll call them, you know, these advanced spiritual experiences. Because if you have negative mind content, that can have a big impact on the type of experience you have. And you need to be very careful about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're saying if you have kind of some like that record playing in your mind, like the monkey mind, or you have some deeper unresolved stuff, emotional yeah. trauma or emotional, we'll just call it drama, that if you try to kind of step into this process, then it can be maybe a negative experience, because a lot of that stuff will maybe come to the surface or come up for you to look at, and it can be too intense. Is that right?
I think so. And I say this, I've not seen anyone, I've seen no one have bad experiences on magic mushrooms. But where I have seen people have problems is when they've gone to the Amazon and done ayahuasca for 30 days, or they've done 8 or 9 trips of ayahuasca and they fractured their minds. Mm. And, you know, for me, that's not smart. You know, you have to respect these things, and you have to respect the very fragile nature of the mind. If we have problems, and I put my hand up and said, you know, I have emotional damage as a result of a child. Right. So I sought relationship counseling. I sought counseling on cognitive behavior therapy, dialectic behavior therapy. Mm-hmm. I am now working with a counselor who's helping me focus on my, you know, my values. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there's a process where we're doing this. If we're looking to awaken and heal, then we really need to know who we are. Because ultimately, we're going to reject that person who we think we are, and we're going to understand that we are, in actual fact, our higher self. But the more honest you are with yourself, and the more you know yourself and all of your faults and all of your counterproductive cycles of behavior and all of the relationship issues you've had in your life, the more you can forgive other people and transform your mind.
Yeah. What is the meaning of life that you have come to after these experiences in altered states of consciousness?
Is nothing more than that I am awareness. And so there's a kind of a, how do we call it, there's a game plan in place where all sentient life emerges on a planet, and sentient life begins to wake up, and ultimately it awakens en masse, and it becomes the guardian of the planet, the benevolent guardian of the planet. We as a species, you know, we've been compromised through childhood development by the development of an ego. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what we've got as human beings right now is three windows on consciousness. It's called the higher self, and pure consciousness. So we're born with awareness of the process of transcendental self-inquiry, and you know, healing is around it's a self-identity crisis. It's solving a paradoxical riddle that you aren't your ego, you are your higher self, and the higher self exists both in the earthly realm and outside of space and time. And when that happens, you know, the mind is transformed, you see it, and it hits you so profoundly that you will never, ever forget that experience for the rest of your life. And what it let me know was it said to me, you know, this experience is the most profound experience a human can ever have. It is the reason you are born innumerable times until you actually resolve this paradoxical riddle about self-identity. Mm-hmm. And once you understand who you are liberated, you are enlightened, you will achieve spiritual enlightenment because you no longer need to undergo karmic rebirth. And, you know, when you come out of this, you are permanently transcendent. So in other words, you wake up to the fact that you realize, aha, I not only have an ego, but I also have a higher self. Mm-hmm. And that higher self uses different parts of the brain to the ego, which is why, you know, innate spiritual behaviors begin to emerge. So, you know, this is where the, you know, the loving kindness, compassion, you know, acceptance, forgiveness, non-judging, equanimity, all of those things just become natural qualities after you've had these experiences.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Woo. My goodness.
Yeah, so can you imagine this? You know, I found these ritual processes through my interest in archaeology. Mm-hmm. I've visited all of these sites. I've had the career that I have had, pharmaceutical innovation and product development, and I'm a veterinary surgeon. What we've got here is some very powerful knowledge that humankind has not really had any common access to.
Right.
And, you know, we've got to learn how to reuse this again. And, you know, this is really where I am, is, you know, how do we overcome the barriers? How do we change people's perceptions? How do we re-educate people to help them understand that, number one, we're misinformed, mm-hmm. and number two, is there's actually a very simple understanding. Mm-hmm. I think rituals are just a means of navigating those three different windows on consciousness. That's all.
Tell me again, say those three windows.
They are the ego, mm-hmm. the higher self, mm-hmm. and pure consciousness.
Mm.
And the higher self is a little bit like an iceberg. The tip of the iceberg that we see is in space and time at the earthly realm. And the part of the iceberg under the water is outside space and time. And it's how do we call it, knowingly connected to pure consciousness.
Mm, got it.
And so Stanislav Grof sees a very similar framework for the structure of consciousness. You know, he's one of the grandfathers of the transpersonal psychology field, and he's been treating people with psychological damage for over 50 years with LSD and holotropic type breathwork to help them access these higher states of consciousness and heal.
Yeah, wow. Wow, this has like been mind blowing.
Has this?
Yes, my brain has been expanded by this conversation. definitely, awesome. And so you have your book.
The book is on sale on Amazon and on iBookstore. It's free today and tomorrow on iTunes or the iBookstore. So you're welcome to download a free copy of the book. If any of you have the disposition where you could provide me a book review either on Amazon, iTunes, or Goodreads, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, awesome. So how can the listeners find out more about you?
Sure. You can visit my website, which is www.ritualmeditation.com. And you can sign up to my social media platforms, my blog. You can access all of the retail sites from that website.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I'll have all of those links on the show page. So people, you all can connect with Carlton very easily there. And check out his book. Like I said, there's so much information packed in there, and you're going to just like have an amazing experience checking that out. So, well, thanks, Carlton, for joining me today. And now I'd love to hear from you guys. The most awesome discussions happen after the show over at theawakenedgoddess.com. So get yourself over there and leave a comment right now. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, subscribe to the show. And of course, it would be absolutely amazing if you shared this with all of your friends. And if you want even more incredible resources, join Awakened Goddess Academy to get a copy of Carlton's book and this month's Quantum Collection of bonus content. And until next time, goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Awakened Goddess Show. I hope you enjoyed today's guest and got something you can start using in your life right away. For more spiritual insights and to listen to more episodes, subscribe to The Awakened Goddess Show at theawakenedgoddess.com and discover wisdom that'll change your life.